Happy Sabbath, everyone. Beautiful day. Good to be here. I had to miss last Sabbath because my car broke down. I regretted that. I hate to miss these series, but I'll get a CD and listen to them all over again. I don't see any guests, but if they are, a warm welcome. Good to see you. Everyone on the internet, I'm glad that you joined us. Glad to have you. Wish you was here in person. We miss all of you. As Mr. Nick said, we have been talking about prophecy, and today my assignment is to talk about the Middle East. Like Mr. Nick said, there's nothing going on over there. You know, Iran pushing and getting, hoping to get Trump to react so he can, you know, get other Muslims to side with him. That's what he's trying to do. He wants to blow the Middle East wide open. But God has a time and a place for everything. It won't happen until he's ready for it to happen. That's one of the reasons for prophecy. Now, a lot of people study prophecy. I've read a lot over the years from a lot of people. A few things that got right, some's totally wrong. But prophecy will happen when God is ready for it to happen. The purpose of prophecy isn't simply to predict tragedy or at the end of the age. And speaking of tragedy, a lot of people, they just want to know what's going on. It's like an entertainment, you know, so they can either escape it or watch, sit back and think it won't have nothing to do with them. Reminds me of my kids when they was little. Daddy, are we there yet? When we go on a long trip, Daddy, are we there yet? Now I've got grandkids that do the same thing, especially when a trip, a feast, a long trip. Papa, are we there yet? That's the way a lot of people look at prophecy. But the main purpose is to help people discover, number one, that there is a creator God. When prophecy is fulfilled, it proves that he's in charge. Number two, that he has expectations for how they, us, the people, should live their lives. His commandments, his holy days. He expects us to keep them. And number three, that he will require them to comply with those expectations for their good. It's for their good. It's not just like he's up there wanting to beat somebody over the head if they don't obey. All of his laws, statutes, is for our good. So with that in mind, what's going to happen next in Bible prophecy? Now, a lot of people out there in the world, they predict things. Trump has predicted things. He said if he don't get reelected, the stock market's going to crash. If he don't get elected, we'll see. Of course, the Democrats, when he was running, prophesied that the stock market would crash if he got elected. So they was wrong, so that didn't work out either. But what does God say? We're going to start in Daniel, which has a lot of prophecy there. In Daniel 2, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, the longest one probably is in chapter 11. In all these chapters, he talks about the four empires that comes and goes that's going to happen. Now, Daniel is a captive in Babylon at the time because Babylon had crushed the Jews and took them into captivity. So there's four empires, the Babylon, Medo-Persian, Greek, and the Roman. Now, he's seen several visions, but it was all about the same empires and the He had a little added a little here and a little there. They was a little bit different, but it was about the same. Then we get to chapter 11. I guess I should get to Daniel myself. And it's talking about in chapter 11 of Daniel. It's talking about the king of the north and the king of the south. Now, who is the king of the north and the king of the south? Well, they're Greek. Actually, I should have went to Daniel 2, verses 44 and 45. I'm sorry. I got a new Bible, and I'm having trouble to find what I want. It's got bigger letters so I can see them better, but it don't help if you can't find it. Daniel 2, and I want to start about it. It's a long prophecy, and it shows in verse 44 that during all these prophecies, God will set up a kingdom. Verse 44, and in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, and the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king, that is King Nebuchadnezzar, what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure. His interpretation is always sure. Daniel 11:35. Like I said, we was talking about the kingdoms. And he's talking about the north king and the south king of fighting through that whole chapter. And some of those of understanding shall fall to refine them and purify them and make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time. I didn't write that one down. It's in chapter 8, it's talking about Daniel, another a vision. And it was talking about where the Greek Empire fell, and it was divided to four kings, and one of them, Seleucid, was the dynasty of the north. He was a general, and Ptolemy's king. And they fought back and forth, and the Jews is the one that suffered during all of that. But so now that they were taken over by the Roman Empire. Now the Roman Empire took the kingdom of the north, and it became a protectorate. And the one in Egypt, the south, the king of the south, was not taken over by violence. They asked the Romans to come in and help them against the king of the north. That's like getting a fox to guard the chicken coop. when they come in, they stayed. They didn't take it by violence. They just come in and took over easily. So it lasted to 30 B.C. with Romans' help. But the last ruler was Cleopatra. Everybody's heard of her. And she had an affair with Caesar and Antony. But she committed suicide because she didn't want to be paraded in Rome as a captive. She was the last ruler. Rome ruled Egypt, but they never did rule Ethiopia. So that brings us back to the king of the north. We're sure that it is the re-empire. In Europe, the 10 nations. And they will be risen up, and they will be the king of the north that will start ruling. But who is the king of the south? Who lives south of Jerusalem? Because all prophecy, north of Jerusalem, south of Jerusalem. Well, the Arabs is the one that lives south of Jerusalem. And most of the Arabs are descendants of Ishmael. Now, for hundreds, thousands of years, they pretty much kept to themselves. They just lived in the peninsula of Arabia. When all this other empires was fighting back and forwards, they just fought each other. In 16:12, God had a little bit to say about that. He said, "He shall be a wild man," talking about Ishmael. "He shall be a wild man. His hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all of his brethren." So he dwelt in Arabia, but he kept to himself, and there are several tribes. Esau married one of Ishmael's wives, so they mixed amongst themselves. And so some of the Arabs are also descendants of Esau, particularly Amalek, a grandson of Esau. There's an old Egyptian Arab proverb that says, "I against my brother and I against our cousin, my brother and my cousin against the neighbor, and all of us against the world." They fought each other, but they hated everybody else in the world that wasn't an Arab. But that soon changed because they was pagan worshipers most of all them years, for hundreds of years. They worshipped idols. But then one of the most famous of Ishmael's children, his direct descendants, come on the scene. His name was Muhammad. That changed everything. Early in the 7th century, about 600 years after the time of Christ, when most famous of Ishmael's descendants came on the scene, the religion that he preached and the landscape of the religion was to change forever. With the Prophet Muhammad and the religion that he founded, Islam, through Muhammad's preaching, he achieved something that had eluded Ishmael's descendants for all these years, from the very beginning. That was unity, to work together. Because, like I said, they fought each other. Everybody wanted to be top dog. But it was his preaching. They all came together, and he believed in one God called Allah. And he was charisma. He got them following him. And they became a great nation. And that was prophesied in Genesis 21:18, that God told Hagar, Ishmael's mom, that she would make a great nation of her son. With Muhammad's preaching and people following him, that's exactly what happened. After only a decade, 10 years, after only a decade, he had already grown to one-third the size of the present 48 states of the United States in 10 years. He had conquered and converted people that big. Within a century after the death of Muhammad, the empire of the Arabs stretched from the Middle East across North Africa to Spain and Portugal in the west and eastward across Central Asia all the way to India and even into China. One of their advances even reached the gates of Paris before being stopped by Charles Martel in 732, exactly 100 years after Muhammad's death. Before the end of their period, the rule of the Muslims built an empire that was larger than Rome's. Everybody in history talks about Rome and what they conquered. But the Muslim empire was almost a third bigger. It was the biggest that it ever was. Today, there are 22 Arab nations. 22. Many of which are populated with the descendants of Ishmael. And of course, there's some other Arabs that's mixed in with the other kids of Abraham. That was even when he married Keturah. And also some of Esau's descendants. Altogether, there are 35 other nations of Islam, with a total of 57 nations. If they all got together and was united, let's just say the West would be in deep trouble. They would be one of the most powerful blocks on earth. Unity has escaped them all these years since the Muslim Empire was broke up. And one of their goals is to reorganize and to be united again. That's what they keep trying, but they can't decide who is going to be top dog. You got Iran that's pushing hard, but they're Persian. They're not Arabs. And they were trying to push hard, and they try to get nuclear weapons. But Saudi Arabia and Egypt are now trying to get nuclear weapons because they don't want Iran to rule them. They want to be the leaders. So what does that have to do with the King of the South? To understand that, we must first have some understanding of the history and thinking of the people in the region. And Islamic thinking, the world is divided in two spheres. Dar al-Islam, meaning the land of Islam, and Dar al-Harb, meaning the land of war. The earth is divided up into two things, the land of Islam and the land of war, the place of fighting, united until the whole world is converted to Islam. That's what they believe, that's what they want, and that's their goal. And you can see why they grew so fast, because the pagans had one choice: convert to Islam or die. A lot of people that really don't believe in God much anyway, if you were that forced with that decision, they convert. Now, in 1958, Egyptian President Nasser formed a United Arab Republic in February 1958. But he only got Syria to join him. He was hoping that the other Arab nations would also join him. But that didn't happen. It ended in September 1961 when Syria succeeded from it, didn't want to be with him anymore. There again, fighting over who wanted to be top dog, who was going to run it. Then there's the pursuit by the Iranians of nuclear weapons that I've already mentioned to gain dominance in the region. And to them, they would like to instigate a cataclysmic upheaval that would hasten the arrival of the Mahdi, their Messiah. They think if they could stir up war, that their Messiah would come and take over and they would rule the world. And they think that if they started something, that would happen. Like I said, Iran is not Arab. They're a Shiite. And most of the Arabs and a lot of the Muslims are all Sunni. Now, the Sunni believe that the main guy has to be a blood descendant of Muhammad's family. The Shiite don't. They just want a strong man. In the end time, the king of the south will rise up to defy the west, striking out against the king of the north, whoever the end time king of the south might be. In between there, I come across an interesting prophecy, I think, in Psalm 83. And I think that, and in the church, some has looked at it too, that it's a prophecy that maybe hasn't been fulfilled yet. It contains an intriguing prophecy of many Middle Eastern nations that appear to be as yet unfulfilled and to possibly tie in with the end times events. If so, it foretells a confederation of nations that are determined to eliminate Israel. In Psalm 83, verse 3-8. Verse 3 says, they have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted together against your sheltered ones. Sheltered ones could be Christians because he's protected them all these years. Verse 4, they have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of it may be remembered no more. For they have consulted together with one consent. They form a confederacy against you, the tents of Edom and the Ishmaelites, Moab and the Hagarites. People that study the scripture thinks the Hagarites may be other children that Ishmael's mom had besides him. Verse 7, Gebal, Ammon, Amalek, Philistia, with the inhabitants of Tyre, and Assyria also has joined with them. They have helped the children of Lot. The children of Lot is Ammon and Moab. Assyria, a lot of those nations, when Assyria captured Israel the first time, wasn't involved in any of that. That's why people that study scripture think that it's a prophecy that's yet to be fulfilled. And I think along those lines myself that it very well could be, because who is Israel now? The United States. And part of Israel is Judah. The Arabs and the Muslims hates Judah, which they call Israel at this time. And they hate the United States because we prop up Israel. We back them. They hate us. They like to destroy us. They proved that on 9/11. So if they get a confederation together, they could attack the United States inside and wipe us out so weak that Assyria, descendants of Assyria, could offer us help and come in, and we would become slaves of them, which there are scriptures to maybe point to that. They do want to destroy us. Unity among the Muslim nations of the Middle East has long been elusive, but slowly, a common purpose is in bringing different peoples of the region together. And this common purpose is the desire to destroy the nation of Israel off the face of the earth and its chief backer, the United States of America, which they don't fully understand is Israel. So they would be doing it. They hate us not only because we do Israel, but they hate the West liberalism. They are strong on obeying. They don't drink. They don't have whiskey. They don't like pornography, all homosexuality. Everything that the West puts up with now, and that's normal, they hate. So they hate us for two reasons. They're afraid that we're going to change, that it'll start seeping in on them, and it will change their society. And they want to destroy us. Let's go back to Daniel 11:40. I want to read Daniel 11:40. This is what kind of brings it ahead. At that time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, whoever that king of the south may be, but it will be south of Jerusalem. Will attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind. Now, why would he attack the king of the north, if especially, say, Assyria and that Germany helped him? Well, as we know, back to the Crusades, the Christian wants Jerusalem. That's their most holy site. It's our most holy site. But it's Catholics also. So what if they move into Jerusalem and set up their headquarters? That would give that Confederation of Nations every excuse to attack them, because they hate us from the history of the Crusades. They don't want no Westerner on any Muslim land, and they claim that Israel, that area of Jerusalem, is Muslims. That's theirs. So they attack them, but the north comes at them like a whirlwind, with chariots, horsemen, many ships, and he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. He shall also enter into the glorious land, that's Israel, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over them, their gold and silver and all the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall follow at his heel. So he destroys them all. That's why those nations, whoever the king of the south is, will come from that area. And he goes in and completely wipes them out. And like I said, he has his headquarters there in the promised land. Because verse 45 says, and he shall plant his tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end. No one will help him. How does he come to his end? Verse 44. But news from the east and the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. What is not mentioned in that confederation is north. A lot of people, prophecies, think it's China and Russia. Could be. But north, there's about five Muslim countries. East is Indonesia, one of the most Muslim countries there are. It's not mentioned in that confederation. What if now they gathered at Euphrates, the river, to conquer, come back and fight them? They don't want them there in that land. And, of course, there's oil that they need. There's a lot of maneuvering going on, destruction and devastation, which takes the lives of at least a third of humankind, And we can read that in Revelation. But it's very important that we pay attention to what's going on and stay close to God so we can escape these things. He would protect us. And if Jesus Christ didn't come at that time, when these nations from the east and the north come up against the Holy Land, which is ruled at that time by the beast, there would no flesh be saved alive. Jesus said that himself in Matthew. There would no one survive. 2 days is the Feast of Trumpets. That pictures Jesus Christ's return. I don't think it's set for him to come this one, but he will come soon on that day in the future. May that day come soon.